Jumping into part two? Just a heads up, it might be helpful to listen to part one if you haven't already, as we'll be building on some of those earlier discussions.
This is The Growth Journey. Real life, real growth, divinely inspired, where military discipline meets a ministry heart. With 40 years of life-shaping experience, including 22 years on active duty, and a deep calling to ministry, David Averett, CEO and founder of CA Jail Outreach Nationwide, shares spirit-led wisdom and practical tools to transform your life. He's also the author of an ebook on growth, bringing even more insight to help you flourish in faith, marriage, leadership, character, church, and business. Ready for divinely inspired results? Let's get started.
Let's get started.
Increasingly finding themselves on the front lines, needing to provide clear, biblically sound teaching to counteract inaccurate or even harmful religious content spreading online. It's a form of digital discipleship and protection. And third is addressing the digital divide. Ethically, ministries need to ensure their digital initiatives don't exclude people. This means actively providing support, maybe training, and accessible technology options for congregants, particularly older adults or those with limited income or digital literacy. Inclusion is key.
Beyond the ethics, though, there's that very practical, very human issue of pastoral burnout. How does the memoir address fatigue and adapting leadership styles in this hybrid world?
It tackles it head on. The memoir explicitly points to hybrid ministry burnout as a major concern. Pastors and their staff are facing real exhaustion from trying to effectively manage both the traditional in-person aspects of ministry and the ever-expanding digital demands.
That two jobs feeling again.
Exactly. This pressure necessitates, according to the memoir, more flexible sermon planning. Pastors are needing to adapt, perhaps preparing sermons that work well both in the room and online, maybe becoming more responsive to real-time feedback or current events discussed online. Leaders also have to master the art of balancing care. How do you effectively nurture relationships and provide pastoral support to both your online community and your in-person congregation, ensuring neither group feels neglected? It requires new skills and strategies.
And it connects back to that leadership distinction too, right?
It does. Crucially, the memoir highlights that for ministries aiming to navigate this complexity and potentially grow, they increasingly need leaders skilled in organizational leadership, not just relational shepherding. The digital age demands robust systems, clear processes, strategic planning, and the ability to manage teams effectively, skills often associated with organizational leaders. It's becoming less feasible for one person to do it all through purely relational means, especially at scale.
So, given these burdens, how can technology actually help pastors rather than just adding more work? What about leveraging technology for enhanced outreach and discipleship?
This is where the augmented part comes in. The memoir outlines immense potential here. Technology offers expanded reach, allowing online ministry to connect with people globally, reach shut-ins, engage with former members who've moved people who would otherwise be completely disconnected. It facilitates enhanced engagement. Think beyond just streaming. Online forums, interactive Q&As, virtual discussion groups, targeted content. These tools can foster greater participation and a deeper sense of community online, if used well.
Making it more interactive.
Yes. It also opens up entirely new discipleship avenues. Ministries are creating online campuses, dedicated ministry apps with daily devotionals, podcasts exploring specific topics in depth. These nurture faith journeys in diverse, ongoing ways. And critically, the memoir keeps circling back to this core idea. Online ministry should ideally be viewed and strategically used as that bridge to in-person engagement. It's a pathway, an entry point, designed to draw people into deeper, embodied, in-person involvement within a local community. It's about using the digital to ultimately strengthen the physical connections, not replace them entirely. That's the strategic sweet spot the memoir points towards. 12. Digital tools in ministry. Practical applications.
David Averett really emphasizes this point. Innovation in ministry isn't about replacing the sacred, but enhancing its reach and impact. That's a call to use the tools wisely. So let's explore some of these practical applications the memoir discusses for ministry today.
Exactly. It's about augmenting, not replacing. The memoir gets quite practical here, looking at tablets, AI, and other technologies for sermon preparation and delivery. Tablets, for example, are incredibly versatile. Pastors are using them for delivering sermons instead of paper notes, leveraging the large screens. They have good cameras for quickly recording social media clips or announcements. Cloud storage makes accessing notes and research anywhere easy.
much more flexible than a printed manuscript.
Definitely. And then there's the rise of artificial intelligence tools. The memoir mentions things like Sermonly, AI platforms specifically designed to help pastors with research, generating sermon outlines, finding relevant illustrations, even suggesting different ways to phrase key points. This can be a huge time saver.
Using AI for sermon prep, that's really cutting edge.
It is, and it's becoming more common. Additionally, there are digital sermon memoir platforms online that offer comprehensive support, full sermon series outlines, background research guides, small group discussion questions tied to the sermon, even promotional graphics for social media. All these tools contribute to that idea of the augmented pastor, enhancing the craft of preaching, homiletics. And it underscores, as the memoir argues, the critical need for future pastoral training programs to include robust digital literacy as a core competency.
That seems essential now. What about using tech for teaching beyond the Sunday sermon, like for Sunday school or leadership training?
Great question. The memoir details innovations in Sunday school and leadership teaching as well. We're seeing the rise of sophisticated online Bible study models. The memoir mentions platforms like Bible Project, which offer structured courses with high-quality videos, downloadable notes, interactive quizzes, and even built-in discussion groups. This makes deep learning highly interactive and accessible from anywhere.
Much more engaging than just reading a chapter.
Often, yes. And looking ahead, the memoir even touches on emerging technologies like virtual reality, VR, and augmented reality, AR, being explored for ministry. Imagine creating immersive biblical storytelling experiences where learners can virtually walk through ancient Jerusalem or witness a biblical event unfold around them.
Wow, that would be incredible.
The potential is amazing. Mm-hmm. And there's also this concept of the gamification of discipleship. This involves using game mechanics like self-paced learning modules, points, progress tracking, interactive quizzes, visually engaging content to make spiritual learning more engaging, maybe even fun, and encourage consistent spiritual formation habits.
Using game principles for spiritual growth. Interesting.
It is. It's about meeting people with methods they find engaging in other parts of their lives.
And beyond the teaching aspect, how are digital tools helping with the practical, day-to-day running of a faith-based organization? The operations side.
This is another area where tech is making a huge difference. The memoir highlights the power of streamlining ministry operations with management software and digital giving. Many ministries now use specialized ministry management software, often abbreviated as CHMS. These platforms act like a central hub. They manage member databases, track attendance and engagement, both online and in person, simplify communication through email and text, handle event registration, coordinate volunteers.
Bringing everything into one place.
Exactly. It centralizes data and automates many administrative tasks, which frees up valuable time and resources, both human and financial life, allowing staff and volunteers to focus more on actual ministry, on people, rather than paperwork. We've already discussed digital giving platforms extensively, how they simplify donations, provide reporting, and ensure consistent financial support. The memoir also notes that AI is starting to be leveraged for operations too, automating administrative tasks, helping manage large member databases, maybe even personalizing communication based on member interests or engagement patterns.
Using data more effectively.
Precisely. Ultimately, the memoir emphasizes that embracing these operational technologies empowers leaders to make more data-driven decisions. They get a clearer picture of what's happening in their ministry, who they're reaching, and where resources are needed most. This leads to more effective, efficient, and impactful ministry overall. It's about working smarter, not just harder. 13, the evolving role of religious content creators and podcasters.
Now, Chaplain David offers this reflection. The title may evolve, but the heart of shepherding remains. Guidance, protection, and spiritual nourishment for God's people. This brings us to a really important, maybe even controversial, question raised in the memoir. Are these online religious content creators, the podcasters, the YouTubers, are they essentially the new pastors in our digital age?
It's a huge question, and one the memoir explores with considerable depth, acknowledging the complexities and sensitivities involved. The reality is, the rise of these independent religious content creators and podcasters, individuals who often command significantly larger audiences than many traditional pastors or entire ministries, forces us to reconsider our traditional definitions.
Because they're doing some of the same things?
Exactly. While these individuals may not have gone through traditional seminary training, or hold a formal ordination certificate, or be accountable to a specific local church structure, they are often fulfilling many of the functions traditionally associated with pastoring. Think about it. They provide spiritual guidance through their teachings. They interpret scripture. They offer encouragement and advice on living a faith-filled life. They build communities, albeit often virtual ones, around shared beliefs and values.
They're teaching, guiding, building community. Sounds like pastoral work.
It does share many overlaps. And their reach is often global, impacting potentially millions of people seeking spiritual nourishment online. The effect can be profoundly impactful.
So the memoir suggests it's more about the function they're performing, not just the formal title they hold.
That's a key part of the argument presented, yes. However, the memoir is careful to present the other side too. It notes that many traditionally trained pastors and leaders may, quite understandably, view these content creators differently. They emphasize the importance of formal theological education for ensuring sound doctrine. They stress the significance of ordination as a recognized commissioning for ministry. And they highlight the crucial role of direct accountability within a specific ministry structure or denomination.
Accountability is a big one.
It is. A major concern often raised, as the memoir points out, is the potential for theological fragmentation, everyone becoming their own interpreter, and, again, the rapid spread of misinformation or even heresy when there isn't a clear structure of authority, vetting, or accountability in place. The memoir references 1 John chapter 4, verse 1 here. Beloved, believe not every spirit, but try the spirits whether they are of God, because many false prophets are gone out into the world. A call to test the source.
So this dynamic really suggests the very definition, the function of what we mean by pastor, might actually need to evolve to fit the realities of this digital world. The traditional understanding seems challenged.
It does seem challenged, or at least significantly expanded. The traditional understanding of a pastor is so deeply rooted in leading a specific, local, physically gathered congregation, whereas these digital religious leaders are often operating in a boundless, global, sometimes asynchronous online environment. It's a different paradigm.
And the memoir even suggests some new terms are emerging to describe these digital leaders, right? Yeah. Reflecting this shift.
It does. Recognizing that the old titles might not fully capture these new roles, Mr. Averett lists several emerging terms that people are starting to use. Digital shepherd, someone who nurtures and guides a spiritual community primarily online. Faith influencer, leveraging social media platforms to impact spiritual lives and beliefs. Spiritual guide, offering wisdom, advice, and teaching through digital content. Online minister, conducting services, offering counsel, building community predominantly via the internet. Cyber theologian, engaging in deep theological discussion and exploration within digital spaces. Virtual pastor, serving a congregation that primarily gathers or exists online. E-evangelist, focusing on spreading the gospel message using electronic media. Podcast preacher, whose primary platform for teaching and influence is podcasting, and digital discipleship coach, specifically focused on facilitating spiritual growth using digital tools and platforms.
Wow, that's quite a list. It really shows how roles are diversifying.
It absolutely does. Ultimately, though, the memoir stresses the need for wisdom and discernment on all sides. It calls for collaboration, where possible, between traditional ministries and credible digital creators. The goal should be ensuring people receive sound spiritual guidance and can find authentic community, whether that happens primarily online, in person, or, most likely for many, in some blend of the two. The pressure of digital scrutiny and competition for pastors.
Let's talk about the pressure this puts on traditional pastors. Mr. Averett makes this really insightful point. In the digital arena, truth is fact-checked in an instant. Our diligence must rise to the speed of light. That sounds like a weighty expectation, doesn't it? Pastors are basically under a microscope now, like never before.
It's a huge pressure, absolutely. The memoir highlights that in this digital age, pastors and ministry leaders face this intense dual pressure, heightened scrutiny regarding the accuracy of everything they say, and the constant need to compete for attention with that vast ocean of online religious content. Let's break down that scrutiny part first. The fear of fact-checking and maintaining accuracy. This is very real. The internet, combined with readily available AI tools, means information is instantly verifiable. Congregants, or even just casual online viewers, can pull out their phones during a sermon or while watching a video.
And check what the pastor just said against Google or a Bible app.
Instantly. They can cross-reference biblical interpretations, historical claims, scientific references, doctrinal statements against countless online sources, digital Bibles, theological databases, commentaries, critical analyses, you name it. This creates a legitimate and frankly healthy pressure for leaders to be absolutely meticulous in their research and preparation. Sloppiness or factual errors will likely be caught and called out, potentially damaging credibility.
So diligence becomes paramount.
It really does. The memoir emphasizes that combating the spread of misinformation online is now a key challenge for leaders. They need to actively engage, not just teach, but provide truly authoritative guidance grounded in careful study. Accuracy builds trust in the digital age.
So it's not just about being accurate, but also about capturing and holding people's attention in what you described as a really crowded, competitive space.
Precisely. Pastors and traditional ministries are now operating squarely within that attention economy. They're competing not just with other local ministries for people's time and attention on a Sunday morning. They're competing with a global marketplace of compelling faith-based content available 24/7 on YouTube, podcasts, blogs, streaming services, even AI-generated sermons or spiritual guidance now.
Competing with literally everything else online.
Pretty much. This creates a compelling, almost urgent need for ministries to produce high-quality, engaging, and relevant digital content if they want to capture and retain the attention of both their existing members and reach potential new congregants online. The memoir delves into several specific challenges stemming from this competition. We've mentioned faith-based community shopping, the ease with which people can browse and sample different online sermons or ministries, making loyalty more fluid and creating a competitive landscape. Then there's the challenge of passive online engagement. Remember those stats? Only about a quarter of virtual viewers feel like active participants. Most don't sing or pray aloud at home. A large majority multitask.
Just having it on in the background, maybe?
Right. This passive consumption makes it incredibly challenging for ministries to create online experiences that truly engage people deeply and foster genuine connection compared to the immersive nature of being physically present.
And the rise of those digital influencers you mentioned earlier adds another layer of competition.
It certainly does. The memoir notes the rise of digital influencers, these popular online figures who, as we discussed, gain that de facto authority. They might be more polished, more entertaining, more niche-focused.
Drawing audiences away from traditional settings.
Potentially, yes. So traditional pastors find themselves competing, not just with other ordained ministers, but with individuals who might have massive followings and significant appeal, often operating without the same level of theological training or institutional accountability. And what's the result of all this pressure, the scrutiny, the competition, the need to constantly create high-quality content across multiple platforms? The memoir concludes it contributes significantly to pastoral fatigue and burnout. It's exhausting. Therefore, the digital age demands something new from leaders. They need to be not only spiritual shepherds grounded in timeless truth, but also increasingly skilled content creators, savvy communicators, and digitally literate managers who can navigate this incredibly complex and competitive online environment effectively. It's a much bigger job description than it used to be. XDV. Why online influencers attract more listeners than traditional pastors.
Let's circle back to that quote from Chaplain David. The digital marketplace of faith offers endless choices. Our calling is to offer timeless truth amidst the noise. The memoir really digs into why this disparity often exists, why these digital influencers sometimes reach audiences in the thousands or tens of thousands, while a traditional local ministry might see attendance in the hundreds. What are the factors?
It's a critical question for leaders to understand, and the memoir details several significant factors that contribute to the often broader appeal of these digital religious content creators compared to many traditional pastors. First, and perhaps most foundational, is accessibility and convenience. This ties directly into that faith-based community shopping phenomenon we keep mentioning. Online influencers offer their content globally, 24/7 on demand. You can listen to their podcast while driving, watch their video while cooking, access their teachings whenever and wherever it suits you.
On your own schedule.
Exactly. It eliminates all those logistical hurdles of traditional attendance. The commute, the fixed service times, the dress code, the parking. This sheer ease of access is a massive draw in our busy world, especially for people with health issues, disabilities, or unpredictable schedules. It just fits modern life better for many. This contrasts sharply with the often localized, time-bound nature of traditional ministry services.
So it's not just about what is said, but how easy it is to hear it and how it's presented.
Precisely. The second factor the memoir highlights is production quality and engagement. Let's be honest. Many successful online influencers invest heavily in making their content look and sound good. We're talking well-produced audio, high-definition video, clear and engaging speaking styles, well-organized content, visually appealing graphics. This contributes to a much more positive professional user experience.
It feels more polished, maybe more engaging.
Often, yes. It makes the information more digestible, more enjoyable to consume, especially for audiences accustomed to the high production values they see in other digital media. They understand they're competing in that attention economy and act accordingly. Third factor, relatability and authenticity. Many content creators excel at building a sense of personal connection with their audience, even digitally. They might share personal stories, be vulnerable, interact directly with comments.
Creating a perceived relationship.
Exactly. They often foster that micro-discipleship we talked about, short, frequent, seemingly personalized interactions that make followers feel seen and understood. This perceived authenticity and relatability can build strong bonds, sometimes feeling more immediate or personal than being one face in a large traditional congregation. Fourth is niche content and specialization. Online influencers have the freedom to specialize. They can focus intensely on specific theological topics, like prophecy or apologetics, particular life stages, parenting, marriage, singles, or unique spiritual approaches, contemplative practices, social justice. This allows them to attract highly targeted, passionate audiences who are specifically seeking that content. Traditional pastors serving a diverse local congregation often need to provide a broader, more general range of teaching.
Catering to a specific interest versus a whole community.
Right. And the digital landscape itself provides unique mechanisms for building credibility, which is the fifth factor. We talked about immediate fact-checking and transparency. Because online content is under constant scrutiny, influencers who are diligent in their research, transparent about their sources, and quick to correct errors can actually build credibility faster in some ways. Accuracy becomes a visible marker of trustworthiness.
Interesting. So the scrutiny can actually work for them if they handle it well.
It can. Sixth factor, a lower barrier to entry and privacy. As we noted, online platforms offer a degree of anonymity and privacy. People can explore faith, listen to different perspectives, or engage with challenging topics from the comfort of their home without feeling the social pressure or commitment involved in physically attending a ministry. It feels less risky for seekers or those hesitant about organized religion. And finally, seventh, leveraging digital tools and data. Many online influencers are incredibly skilled at using digital tools for outreach, marketing, and discipleship. They understand search engine optimization, social media algorithms, email marketing, audience analytics.
They know how to play the digital game.
They often do. They use data to understand what content resonates, when to post, how to reach new audiences. This data-driven approach allows them to optimize their reach and impact far more effectively than some traditional ministries that are still learning or perhaps hesitant to fully embrace these digital strategies.
This is really fascinating. It underscores that it's not just about the core message of faith itself, but very much about how that message is packaged, where it's delivered, and how easy it is for people to access and engage with it in today's world.
That's the critical takeaway the memoir presents. While a traditional pastor's authority typically stems from formal training, ordination, and local accountability, the digital landscape has enabled these popular online influencers to gain significant de facto authority based on reach, relatability, and perceived expertise. This reality creates a compelling, almost unavoidable need for traditional ministries themselves to step up their game to produce high-quality, engaging, relevant, and easily accessible digital content if they want to effectively compete for attention and remain influential voices in the spiritual lives of both their members and the wider world. The digital age demands that leaders become not just shepherds, but also skilled communicators, and yes, even content creators, who understand how to navigate this complex and highly competitive environment. Where should people go for religious and leadership content? What defines credibility?
Okay, given this vast and complex landscape, Chaplain David offers this piece of wisdom. Credibility in the digital age isn't just about titles. It's about transparency, diligence, and genuine devotion to truth. That really hits on the challenge of figuring out who to listen to, doesn't it? Where should people go? What makes someone credible online?
It's an increasingly vital question, and the memoir dives deep into it, trying to provide some clarity in a murky environment. First, it reiterates the evolving landscape of content consumption. We have to accept the reality. People are turning to digital channels for religious and leadership content in massive numbers. Remember those stats. 30% searching for info, 21% using scripture apps, 15% listening to podcasts, 20% watching videos. YouVersion's 875 million app installations. The internet is already a primary source of spiritual nourishment and leadership insight for millions.
The shift has happened.
It has. And this reflects that consumeristic culture of worship or learning, where individuals actively shop for content that meets their needs for convenience, relevance, and quality.
So if people are actively shopping and choosing, what are they looking for? What signals credibility to them in an online source, whether it's religious or leadership focused?
The memoir outlines several key factors that often contribute to perceived credibility online. First, professional background and expertise. While maybe less direct in the purely religious sphere, think about secular content. People value credentials, experience, education. This often translates. Individuals might look for creators with demonstrated theological training, deep biblical knowledge shown over time, or practical, real-world experience in ministry or leadership, like Mr. Averett himself, with his military leadership and chaplaincy background. Credentials still matter to many. Second, clear and consistent doctrine for religious content. In a world awash with diverse and sometimes contradictory teachings, people often seek out sources that present a clear, consistent, biblically grounded message over time. Reliability matters. Third, relatability and authenticity. We keep coming back to this. Creators who are perceived as genuine, transparent, perhaps vulnerable, and relatable on a human level tend to build strong connections and trust. This fosters that micro-discipleship. Fourth, high production quality. Like it or not, professionalism in presentation, clear audio, good video, well-organized delivery often signals credibility and respect for the audience's time and attention. Sloppy production can undermine the message. And fifth, that element of immediate fact-checking. In today's world, creators who embrace transparency, cite their sources, and respond thoughtfully to questions or challenges can actually build credibility through that process. Being open to scrutiny signals confidence in their message.
Okay, so that's how online content creators often build credibility. But let's contrast that. Traditionally, what gives a pastor, a leader within a faith community, the authority to teach on these deep life topics, the Bible, marriage, raising kids, ethics?
Right. The memoir explains that traditionally, a pastor's recognized authority stems from a combination of several key sources, often formally acknowledged. First, formal theological training and ordination. Many pastors undergo years of rigorous theological education, seminary degrees, etc., and are then formally ordained or licensed by a recognized denomination or church body. This process vets their knowledge, character, and calling, providing a deep understanding of scripture, theology, church history, and pastoral care practices. Second, a sense of calling and spiritual gifting. Pastors often articulate a strong subjective sense of being called by God to ministry, and the congregations often recognize specific spiritual gifts in them related to teaching, leadership, preaching, or shepherding, referencing biblical passages about spiritual gifts like Romans chapter 12 or Ephesians chapter 4.
So an internal call and external affirmation.
Often, yes. Third, and this is crucial, local ministry accountability and relationship. A pastor's authority is typically deeply intertwined with their relationship to a specific local congregation. They are known by their people, they live among them, they build trust over time, and critically, they are accountable to the leadership structures, like elders or a board, within that local ministry. The memoir references Hebrews chapter 13, verse 17 here. Obey them that have the rule over you and submit yourselves, for they watch for your souls, as they that must give account, that they may do it with joy and not with grief, for that is unprofitable for you. That accountability is key. And finally, fourth, practical experience and pastoral care. Through years, often decades, of walking alongside individuals and families through joys and sorrows, pastors gain invaluable practical wisdom in applying biblical principles to the complexities of real life. That hands-on experience builds a unique kind of authority.
So there's a really clear distinction in the shepherding role itself between a traditional pastor serving a local flock and an online creator addressing a dispersed audience, isn't there?
A very significant one, which the memoir highlights repeatedly. As we've discussed, the biblical model of the church heavily emphasizes that local gather assembly, Hebrews chapter 10, verse 25 again. That physical gathering is seen as essential for deep fellowship, corporate worship, mutual encouragement, shared sacraments, and that direct accountability under recognized spiritual leadership. The tangible benefits we talked about, health, social connection, active participation, seem uniquely tied to this embodied model.
And pastors have specific functions within that model.
Exactly. Traditional pastors are typically ordained within a specific ecclesiastical structure, which involves oversight and accountability. They administer the sacraments, baptism, communion, which are generally understood as communal physical rites within the gathered body. Online creators, however influential, usually operate outside these formal structures and accountability loops. Their flock is often a diffuse, asynchronous global audience rather than a geographically defined, formally structured ministry body.
So the relationship is different.
Fundamentally different. The memoir also stresses the depth of pastoral care. While online platforms can facilitate prayer requests or virtual groups, that deep personal hands-on shepherding, the hospital visits, the crisis counseling, the long-term relational discipleship is profoundly more challenging, if not impossible, to replicate effectively purely online. So while online creators can be incredibly valuable as teachers, evangelists, or inspirers reaching a broad audience, the memoir suggests they may not fully replicate the holistic role of a pastor serving a specific local congregation.
Which brings us back to that core question. Can people pastor online or attend faith-based communities entirely online and get the same thing?
This is really the crux of the hybrid ministry debate. And the memoir suggests, based on the evidence presented, that while online platforms offer truly significant benefits, expanded reach, amazing accessibility, convenient learning, they often fall short in replicating those deep social connections and, perhaps surprisingly, the tangible health benefits linked to in-person attendance. Remember the potential links between online-only engagement and loneliness or depression cited in the memoir. While online formats definitely facilitate that micro-discipleship and connect global communities in new ways, the Bible's strong emphasis on physical gathering, the unique experiences possible in corporate worship, and the depth required for true pastoral shepherding suggests that online ministry, while valuable, likely cannot fully replace the holistic benefits of being part of a local embodied faith community. This is why the memoir keeps returning to the idea of online ministry serving as that bridge to in-person engagement, using the digital to draw people towards deeper physical community.
So the ideal isn't necessarily choosing one over the other, but perhaps embracing a blended approach.
Precisely. That seems to be the most realistic and potentially fruitful path forward presented in the memoir, both for individuals seeking nourishment and for leaders guiding ministries. The ideal for many individuals today might be a blended spiritual diet. Rely on the local faith-based community for core discipleship, accountability, and embodied community, reaping those unique benefits of in-person gathering. And simultaneously, utilize credible online memoir for supplemental learning, diverse perspectives, and global connection. Online resources offer incredible convenience and reach, providing ways to engage with Scripture, explore topics deeply, and connect with the wider body of Christ globally. For ministry leaders, this means accepting they're operating in this blended reality. They need to adapt their leadership, leverage technology strategically for outreach and supplemental discipleship, provide authoritative guidance in the noisy digital space, while still prioritizing and fostering deep, meaningful, in-person connections. Ultimately, the memoir suggests the credibility of any content, whether from a traditional pastor or an independent online creator, will increasingly be judged not just by titles, but by its perceived biblical fidelity, the demonstrated expertise and authenticity of the presenter, and its genuine ability to foster spiritual growth and authentic connection both online and offline. 7. Why do pastors and leaders sometimes avoid external digital content?
Okay, this is something I've wondered about. Chaplain David observes, isolation stifles innovation. To lead the church, organizations, and faith-based organizations forward, we must open our minds to the digital wisdom all around us. Yet it can seem perplexing, can it, when some pastors or ministry leaders appear hesitant, maybe even resistant, to engaging with external online memoir. Why might that be?
It absolutely can seem perplexing from the outside, especially given the sheer volume of potentially helpful content available. The memoir delves into this, exploring potential reasons why pastors and leaders might be reluctant to actively consume other people's religious or leadership memoir, whether it's ebooks, podcasts, YouTube channels, blogs, online courses, or other digital formats from fellow leaders or religious creators. Now, the memoir notes direct statistics on this specific behavior are scarce, but it provides some really insightful potential reasons based on broader research about pastoral pressures and technological adoption. One major factor is likely overwhelm and time constraints. Let's be real. Ministry is incredibly demanding. Pastors are often stretched incredibly thin, trying to balance sermon prep, pastoral care visits, administrative tasks, counseling sessions, meetings. The list goes on.
Their plates are already overflowing.
Completely. So the idea of adding the regular consumption of potentially vast amounts of external digital memoir on top of everything else can simply feel overwhelming, like an impossible task. The memoir cites a Barna Group study indicating that overwhelming stress was a primary reason 56% of pastors considered leaving full-time ministry. Adding more to-dos might feel like the breaking point. There's also the related issue of pure information overload. The sheer volume of content published online every single day is staggering. Just sifting through it all to find what's relevant, credible, and truly useful can feel like a full-time job in itself. It's easier sometimes to just stick with familiar memoir.
So part of it might be a self-preservation tactic, trying to protect their focus.
Yes, that's another angle the memoir explores. Some pastors might intentionally limit external input as a way of maintaining focus and avoiding distraction. This could stem from a desire for protection of local ministry focus. They might feel a deep responsibility to tailor their teaching and leadership specifically to their own congregation's unique needs, context, and history. They might worry that consuming too much generic external content could dilute their unique voice or distract from their specific local mission.
Keeping it relevant to their people.
Exactly. Some might also prioritize their personal spiritual disciplines. Direct scripture study, prayer, quiet reflection over consuming memoir created by others. They might view these practices as more essential for their own spiritual nourishment and sermon preparation, referencing Matthew chapter 4, verse 4. Man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of God. They prioritize the primary source.
And what about concerns over the quality or theology of what they might find online? That seems like a valid concern for a pastor.
Absolutely. That's a significant point discussed in the memoir. Concerns about theological purity and misinformation. Pastors often see themselves as guardians of doctrine for their flock. So they may be highly cautious, even skeptical, about introducing or consuming content from outside sources that could potentially contain theological inaccuracies, drift from biblical orthodoxy, or introduce teachings that deviate from their ministry's established beliefs or denominational distinctives.
Protecting the flock from grievous wolves, as the scripture says.
Precisely. The memoir references Acts chapter 20, verses 28 and 29, where Paul warns the Ephesian elders, "Take heed, therefore, unto yourselves and to all the flock. For I know this, that after my departing shall grievous wolves enter in among you, not sparing the flock." That sense of protective responsibility is strong for many pastors. This leads to a legitimate fear of false teaching. The internet allows harmful or heterodox teachings to spread incredibly quickly and widely. Faced with this, some pastors might simply err on the side of extreme caution, sticking only to highly vetted or historically recognized memoir. The memoir references 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 1 again, about false teachers bringing in damnable heresies. This constant need to vet everything can lead to what might be called discernment fatigue, always having to prove all things, as 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 21 encourages, while wise can also be incredibly exhausting when the volume of content is so high.
That makes sense. And sometimes maybe it's just about their own comfort level with the technology itself.
Indeed. The memoir points clearly to technological hesitancy and digital reluctance as another factor. A significant number of pastors, particularly those in older generations perhaps, may simply feel unprepared, uncomfortable, or lacking the necessary skills to navigate the digital world effectively. The memoir cites that Texas A&M University study again, where nearly two-thirds of pastors felt least prepared for the technology-related aspects of their work, especially highlighted during the pandemic. You even hear quotes like, "This wasn't the job I signed up for as a pastor."
A feeling of being forced into a tech role they didn't want.
Exactly. For some, there might even be active resistance to digital solutions. Some ministry leaders, and even members, might actively oppose embracing online service options or engaging heavily with digital media due to personal preference. A deep skepticism about technology's role in faith, or just a general mindset resistant to change. The memoir even quotes a pastor who reportedly called using Facebook for online services the stupidest idea I have ever heard. When that level of resistance exists, actively seeking out more digital content from others seems unlikely. This can be compounded by a generational divide, where younger staff might be enthusiastic about digital tools, creating internal friction with more hesitant senior leaders.
What about ego? Could a perceived threat to their own authority or a feeling of self-sufficiency play a role?
The memoir suggests this is another possible factor, perhaps more subconscious for some. Perceived threat to authority or self-sufficiency. This might manifest as a kind of not-invented-here syndrome, a reluctance to adopt ideas or use content developed outside their own ministry, perhaps feeling it implies their own insights aren't sufficient. There could also be an element of protection of authority. A pastor might believe, consciously or unconsciously, that drawing too heavily or too obviously from external digital memoir could subtly undermine their unique standing and authority as the designated teacher for their specific flock. And of course, like anyone, pastors can have personal bias. They might naturally gravitate towards content that confirms their existing theological views or leadership philosophies, and simply avoid or dismiss memoir they perceive as irrelevant, disagree with, or find personally unappealing.
Finally, David Averitt makes a really strong, almost ethical point in his memoir about tracked emails and professional integrity. What's that about?
This is a crucial, practical, and ethical consideration the memoir raises for the digital age. It emphasizes that pastors and leaders today need to recognize something important. Engaging with digital content shared by others, whether it's reading an article linked in an email, watching a requested video, listening to a podcast episode someone recommended, isn't just optional. It's presented as a matter of professional courtesy and mutual respect within the broader leadership community. Just as pastors invest immense effort into their own sermons and teachings, likely expecting their congregation's attention and care, the memoir argues that the same consideration should ideally be extended to the work of fellow creators and leaders. We live in this hyper-connected world where professionalism and genuine engagement are increasingly visible and expected.
And the tracking aspect makes it visible.
Exactly. The memoir highlights transparency in the digital age. Leaders need to understand that technology often allows senders to track whether links in emails were clicked or attachments opened. Therefore, honesty is paramount. If asked whether they've engaged with shared content, claiming to have done so when tracking data might show otherwise is simply dishonest and potentially damaging to professional relationships and integrity. In a world where, as the memoir puts it, everyone is watching everyone online, authenticity and integrity become more visible and more critical than ever. It references Colossians chapter 3, verse 9. Lie not one to another, seeing that ye have put off the old man with his deeds. A direct call for truthfulness.
So the excuse of I don't have time might need reevaluation.
The memoir strongly suggests so. If a leader genuinely feels they consistently don't have the time to engage with relevant external content shared by peers or mentors, it might warrant a serious look at their priorities and time management skills. The argument is made. If a congregation makes time to listen to their pastor and financially support the ministry, shouldn't leaders likewise make some time for continuous learning and engagement with the broader body of Christ, especially when that engagement could contribute to their own growth, effectiveness, and the relevance of their ministry? Refusal to engage at all could, in some cases, indicate a lack of commitment to continuous improvement, or even a concerning level of disconnection from the wider Christian community and the evolving ministry landscape. So, in summary, while there's no single reason, it's likely a combination of factors, real-time constraints, valid concerns about theological integrity, varying comfort levels with technology, and perhaps some underlying issues of authority or prioritization that contribute to why some pastors and leaders might hesitate to fully embrace the vast sea of external digital memoir available today. However, the memoir strongly argues that the rapidly changing world necessitates a significant shift in mindset and practice for leaders who want to remain effective and relevant. XE8, the urgency for pastors to embrace modern digital content, staying relevant in a changing world.
This leads us to a sense of urgency. Chaplain David really drives this home. Our message is timeless, but our methods must be timely. Yesterday's tools can't build tomorrow's church organizations and faith-based organizations. That hits hard, doesn't it? The memoir seems to be stressing that digital engagement isn't just an option anymore. It's become a necessity for relevance.
It's presented as an urgent clarion call. Absolutely. The memoir argues compellingly that it is now imperative, not optional, but imperative that pastors and leaders today fully understand, engage with, and learn from modern digital platforms and content formats. We're talking blogs, podcasts, YouTube channels, ministry websites, apps, audiobooks, even understanding the implications of AI. These aren't just supplementary tools anymore. They are increasingly seen as crucial foundational elements for effectively building, sustaining, and growing a ministry in the 21st century.
So sticking only to the old ways is risky.
Extremely risky, according to the perspective in the memoir. While traditional forms like hardback books and classic sermon series certainly hold timeless value, the fundamental method by which most people consume information has undergone this radical shift. The memoir poses a challenging question. When was the last time most people under, say, 50 went to a gas station specifically to buy a newspaper or made a dedicated trip to a physical bookstore just to browse for a particular nonfiction memoir?
Yeah, that's much less common now. We get news online by memoir with a click.
Exactly. The entire landscape of information dissemination has evolved dramatically. And the memoir argues that ministry must adapt accordingly if it wants to connect with people where they are actually living and learning. It calls for leaders and pastors to start thinking outside the traditional box, to actively, intentionally begin consuming other relevant online memoir, not just producing their own as a viable means of growing personally and professionally. This is presented as essential for ensuring their ministries remain relevant and impactful in today's rapidly changing world.
It really is like that analogy you used earlier. The doctor relying solely on 20-year-old textbooks. The core principles might be sound, but the application, the context, the delivery becomes outdated and potentially ineffective.
That's the perfect analogy, and the memoir uses similar reasoning. To rely solely on sermon styles, leadership models, or communication methods developed 5, 10, or even 20 years ago without significantly updating the delivery, the contextual application, the understanding of how people receive information now, well, it's to risk becoming disconnected, even irrelevant to the very people they're trying to reach.
The message gets lost if the medium is ignored.
Precisely. Yes, the core message of the gospel, the scriptures themselves, are presented as eternal and unchanging. But the methods by which those truths are communicated, illustrated, and applied must be continually refreshed and adapted to resonate with contemporary audiences living in a digital world. Just think about any other profession. Professionals are expected to engage in continuous learning to stay current with the latest research, methodologies, best practices, and tools in their field. The memoir argues that those in ministry and leadership have a similar professional and indeed spiritual responsibility. They need to possess the most up-to-date understanding possible, not just of scripture, but of culture, communication, and effective leadership practices to teach, instruct, guide, and lead effectively today. Sticking only to what worked in 1995 is presented as insufficient for 2025 and beyond.
So actively studying what others are doing digitally isn't about copying, but about learning and growing. What are the specific benefits the memoir outlines for pastors who do engage with external digital content?
Yes, it's about learning, adapting, and staying sharp. The memoir outlines several direct benefits for pastors and leaders who actively study other relevant websites, blogs, podcasts, online courses, and digital memoir from fellow leaders and respected religious creators. First, they can gain fresh perspectives. Hearing how others explain biblical truths, address challenging contemporary issues, or connect with different demographics can spark new ideas and prevent their own teaching from becoming stale. Second, they can identify emerging trends. Paying attention to the conversations happening online helps leaders understand how people are engaging with faith today, what spiritual questions are most pressing, what cultural shifts are impacting their congregations. Third, they can learn best practices. They can observe and adopt successful strategies for communication, digital outreach, online community building, and effective leadership from innovative ministries and leaders around the world. Why reinvent the wheel? Fourth, engaging with other voices can actually prevent burnout. The memoir includes a quote from one pastor who noted that regularly feeding from other preachers helps avoid burnout, as hearing the word from peers can reignite passion and renew the soul, referencing Psalm 19, verse 7. The law of the Lord is perfect, refreshing the soul. And finally, fifth, it can genuinely enhance their own teaching. Many preachers excel in different areas. Maybe one is great at storytelling, another at application, another at historical context. Learning from the strengths of others can significantly improve a pastor's own homiletics, their ability to communicate effectively. So the memoir issues this strong call for leaders and pastors to return to, or perhaps adopt for the first time, a posture of continuous humble study and learning, leveraging the incredible wealth of digital memoir available. Embracing this digital learning curve isn't presented as a compromise of faith or tradition, but as a necessary strategic step to ensure their ministry continues to thrive, remain relevant, and faithfully fulfill its mission in the complex hybrid future.
Chaplain David really encapsulates this entire sentiment with two incredibly powerful concluding thoughts in his memoir. First, he states with stark honesty, "The world went digital, and so did my quest for spiritual growth. The church, organizations, and faith-based organizations has a choice. Meet me here, or I'll continue my journey with those who do." And he follows that with this observation about his own life. "I love my church, organizations, and faith-based organizations, but my spiritual fix comes from a blended diet of in-person worship and the endless memoir the digital world offers. It's truly a global classroom." Those really capture the personal reality for so many today. Strategic recommendations for church, organizations, and faith-based organization leaders. Okay, so the memoir doesn't just diagnose the situation, it offers concrete advice. David Averett provides this guidance. To truly lead, we must first learn, especially from the ever-evolving digital landscape. It seems the memoir aims to equip leaders with clear, actionable strategies to navigate this new reality.
Absolutely. It moves from analysis to practical application. For leaders looking for specific ways to engage these topics, the memoir even suggests some actionable content ideas for your blog or ministry communications. For example, writing on the hybrid faith community, balancing digital reach with deep connection to explore practical strategies for bridging the virtual and physical. Or maybe, beyond the sermon, how podcasts are revolutionizing discipleship, discussing the benefits and how-tos of ministry podcasting.
Offering practical takeaways.
Exactly. Other suggestions include titles like Decoding Digital Faith, What Bible Apps and Online Studies Reveal About Today's Believers, Encouraging Leaders to Actually Look at Engagement Data to Understand Needs, or The Truth About In-Person Ministry, Unpacking the Health and Community Benefits, Making an Evidence-Based Case for Gathering Physically. Also, Navigating the Digital Minefield, Data Privacy, Misinformation, and Ethical Leadership, Tackling Those Tough Ethical Issues Head-On. Or Pastors as Digital Shepherds, Adapting Leadership for the Online Flock, Addressing Pastoral Fatigue and Evolving Leadership Styles. And finally, Tech Savvy Ministry, Tools and Innovations for the Modern Faith Community, offering practical advice on integrating specific digital tools.
So lots of potential starting points for discussion and strategy. And beyond blog posts, what are the overarching key strategies for thriving in a hybrid faith-based landscape that the memoir outlines? What's the roadmap?
The memoir synthesizes its recommendations into several essential strategies for leaders and ministries aiming not just to survive, but to thrive. First, embrace lifelong digital learning. Leaders must commit to continuously developing their own digital literacy and understanding the evolving digital landscape. It's not a one-time training. Second, prioritize digital justice and inclusion. Ministries need to actively work to bridge the digital divide, ensuring all members have the access and support needed to participate, regardless of age, income, or tech savviness. Third, balance convenience with connection. While leveraging the convenience of digital, leaders must intentionally design opportunities for deeper, meaningful in-person social connection and community building that complement online engagement. Don't let convenience entirely replace connection. Fourth, strategic content diversification. Ministry should create diverse, high-quality, engaging digital content tailored to different platforms, website, social, podcast, app, to meet people where they are and cater to different learning styles. Fifth, cultivate a culture of digital stewardship. This means implementing strong data protection practices, modeling ethical online behavior, and actively combating misinformation within their own online communities. Take responsibility for the digital space you create. Sixth, invest in operational technology. Utilize tools like ministry management software, CHMS, and robust digital giving platforms to streamline administrative tasks, freeing up precious time and resources for relational ministry. And finally, seventh, foster a bridge mentality. Consistently view and message online ministry primarily as a pathway toward deeper in-person engagement and commitment within the local community, rather than presenting it as an equal or permanent alternative. Use digital to draw people closer. Taken together, these strategies offer a comprehensive roadmap for navigating the complexities and harnessing the opportunities of ministry in the digital age, as presented in Mr. Everett's memoir.
The Evolving Landscape of Faith-Based and Leadership.
Wow. We have covered so much ground today, exploring this really profound transformation happening in religious life and leadership, all through the lens of David Everett's memoir, Click and Connect. We've seen the incredible convenience and the vastly expanded reach offered by digital platforms. We've also grappled with the serious challenges, concerns about data privacy, the constant battle against misinformation, the potential for a more superficial, consumeristic approach to faith, and the very real strain on leaders. It's a complex, dynamic, and frankly unavoidable new reality.
It truly is. And the memoir's findings, particularly around the tangible mental and physical health benefits linked specifically to in-person religious attendance, are incredibly striking and shouldn't be overlooked amidst the digital rush. It underscores that undeniable need the memoir highlights for leaders today. They have to blend the timeless skills of traditional shepherding, caring for souls, teaching truth with modern organizational leadership capabilities. They need to strategically address the real issue of pastoral fatigue, adapt their methods constantly, and leverage technology wisely, not merely as a substitute for embodied community, but as that powerful tool for enhanced outreach, deeper discipleship, and ultimately strengthening those vital in-person connections.
So bringing it all together, the pathway forward, the route to continued vitality for faith-based communities in this era, seems clear according to the memoir. It lies in wholeheartedly embracing digital literacy, making digital justice and inclusion a priority, and very intentionally strategically bridging the virtual and the in-person aspects of community life.
And Chaplain David's final thought from the memoir provides such a powerful summary and a forward-looking challenge. The horizon of ministry is vast and digital. Let's step boldly into this new era, guided by timeless truth and timely wisdom. It really leaves us, and you, our listener, with the memoir's concluding provocative question to ponder. What steps will your faith-based community, your organization, your church take to embrace this hybrid future?
Your journey, your ministry, your leadership, it all matters. And we want to be a part of supporting that journey.
Whether you're feeling called to launch a nonprofit, maybe you're seeking powerful prayer for a specific situation, or perhaps you're just searching for renewed hope and a genuinely fresh start, please know our team at CA Jail Outreach is really prepared and eager to assist. We also extend our support directly to individuals currently within the jail system, and just as importantly, to their families and children on the outside, offering a practical helping hand and encouragement when it's needed most.
It's easy to connect. To reach out and explore the memoir or get in touch, simply visit the CA Jail Outreach website. You'll find the link right there in a deep dive description in your app. Just tap on the blue highlighted text.
And for that deeper dive into everything we discussed today, the full, complete memoir with all the scriptures and supporting details is available on the website. Just look for the Leadership Memoir tab on the menu bar. Please feel free to share the message that help and hope are available. As David from CA Jail Outreach often says, more than just a voice, we're a helping hand and a praying heart. Let's connect and build your tomorrow starting today.
Thanks so much for listening. We'll catch you on the next deep dive. Until the trumpet blows, wishing you a fantastic day.
Thanks for joining us on The Growth Journey. If you're ready to keep growing in faith, leadership, and life, be sure to follow the show and share it with someone on their own path. For more resources to connect with David Everett, visit cajailoutreach.org. Until next time, keep pursuing real life, real growth, and divinely inspired results.